If you were attacked with a baseball bat and you were wearing this bright orange poop under your clothes, then your attacker might as well swung a toothpick at you. The goop will take the hit for you and absorb the strike. Just to be clear, we're talking about protection from blunt force trauma and not bullets. However, this could certainly be combined with a ballistic vest. A company called D30 concocted this remarkable, soft, stretchy, flexible orange material that absorbs shock, and it calls it Trust Body Armor. Sure, the raw material looks and feels like orange silly putty, but the bright orange goo helps achieve both protection and unrestricted movement all at the same time. And unlike traditional heavy, clunky, hot, awkward-fitting armor, the Trust Armor is a comfortable armor to wear because it bends, stretches, and breathes, while still providing a high degree of protection from the sort of blunt force trauma that commonly occurs. The futuristic Trust Vest Armor worn beneath a regular shirt will basically be unnoticeable. In practice, this means if you're wearing a vest protecting your stomach, the orange goo inside the vest will absorb a punch, a thrown brick, or even the impact of a tire iron swung at you. When D30 first launched, it immediately caught the interest of top Hollywood stuntmen, who recognized it could provide much-needed relief from their regular beatings at work. And with partnerships like D30's liner integration into the Shoot sports helmets, civilians will now have access to this remarkable innovation. Now football, lacrosse, baseball players can benefit from this advanced trauma protection. The amazing goo is also now available in protective apparel for other high-impact popular sports like motorcycle racing, mountain biking, and even snowboarding. You know, Colonel, I love innovation, especially when it can protect our troops and our families.
And it looks like what you said it looks like.
Unfortunately, orange poop.
Thank you, Roland. I think that was a very interesting report. Straight ahead on Frontlines of Freedom, we'll talk leadership, the General Hal Moore version of it. Then we'll meet a WASP. That's a lady who has flown aircraft for our military during World War II. All this is coming up. I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. You are standing tall with Frontlines of Freedom. I'll be right back. Troops, we're doing pull-ups. Let's do 25, then stand at ease. LuLaRoe is comfortable, affordable fashion for women, men, and kids. Sold by tens of thousands of small business owners across the U.S., including many military families. Founded by entrepreneurs seeking a career that allows more freedom to be at home with their families, LuLaRoe is sold at in-home pop-up parties and on social media VIP pages. Check out a sampling of the unique prints and patterns in dresses, tops, leggings, and skirts at LuLaRoe.com and follow on Instagram, Facebook, and Pinterest.
For nearly 2,000 severely injured veterans, everyday life has become filled with barriers. So we build specially adapted homes at Homes for Our Troops. And thanks to our donors and supporters, this life-changing gift of freedom is provided mortgage-free to these veterans. But we need you to join us, too, in completing this important mission. Please visit HFOTUSA.org and help build homes and rebuild lives.
USA Radio News.
The confirmation battle ahead for Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh is already beginning. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell took to the Senate floor earlier today.
A number of our Democratic colleagues could not even wait until the president's announcement last night before launching attacks on his nominee. This was, in some cases, quite literally a fill-in-the-blank opposition. They wrote statements of opposition only to fill in the name later. Sadly, this is not a new approach for the far-left special interest groups.
President Trump spoke to reporters today ahead of his seven-day European trip. The president talked about one of the things he hopes to accomplish on the trip.
NATO has not treated us fairly, but I think we'll work something out. We pay far too much, and they pay far too little. But we will work it out, and all countries will be happy.
President Trump will also be meeting with Russian President Vladimir Putin on the trip. This is USA Radio News.
There's no question you need omega-3s. But which form should you take? Fish oil or krill oil? Scientists have debated this for years. Luckily, there's a new solution to satisfy everyone. It's called Krill Omega 50 Plus. It combines ultra-pure fish oil and joint-soothing krill oil together in just one tiny pill. It's so powerful, it can promote the health of your heart and your arteries. And if that wasn't enough, it can also boost your joint comfort in just days. We're so sure Krill Omega 50 Plus will work for you. We'll even send you a free bottle to put to the test. The debate is over. It's not fish oil or krill oil. It's both. And now it's free. Just pay $4.95 for shipping and claim your free bottle. Call now. 1-800-399-6392. 1-800-399-6392. That's 1-800-399-6392.
This program is brought to you by Joe Peters at Coldwell Banker, certified USAA Real Estate Rewards Network agent.
One of the biggest decisions in your lifetime is buying or selling a house. Choosing a realtor with strong client communication, technology, and marketing skills will dramatically improve your chance of success. That's why Hunterdon and Somerset's residents rely on Joe Peters. Joe believes his clients deserve a smooth and seamless experience, not a roller coaster ride. As a Coldwell Banker sales associate with 20 years of experience, he's helped hundreds of people to achieve their goals and dreams, no matter where they were in the buying or selling process. Joe accomplishes this by approaching every transaction from a business perspective. Initially, he tries to fully understand your goals and dreams and make them his own. Then he takes the mass amount of data that's available and distills it down to a few understandable action points. And finally, he controls the entire process through technology and marketing. The end result to you is a smooth, rewarding customer experience. Let Joe show you how to take his professional expertise and put it to work for you. To contact Joe, go to jpeters.com or call 908-238-0118.
Troops, welcome back to the nation's largest military veteran talk radio show, Frontlines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. Troops, please do send me your comments and questions. Email me through frontlinesoffreedom.com. Now it's time to meet Mike Guardia. He's written one of the best books on leadership I've ever read. It's Hal Moore on Leadership. And General Hal Moore was one of our nation's truly great leaders in combat and out of combat. Anyway, welcome to Frontlines of Freedom, Mike.
Hi, Danny. It's great to be on your show. Thank you for having me.
You wrote, I guess you co-authored this book with the late General Moore. Isn't that right?
Indeed, I did.
Tell us your story. What's your background and how did you come to be the general's co-author?
All righty. Well, let's see. My first introduction to Hal Moore was on March 1st, 2002. That was opening night for We Were Soldiers, the epic Vietnam War picture starring Mel Gibson, who played Hal Moore in that film. And I was blown away by not only the content of the film, but how well Mel Gibson actually portrayed the general. And what blew me away about the film was that he was the first Vietnam War picture that I had ever seen to portray the Vietnam veteran in a positive light. And I was just taken aback by how well the film was constructed. And decided from that point forward that I wanted to learn more about Hal Moore. And in the years following the film's release, I was able to get my hands on a copy of We Were Soldiers Once and Young and the follow-up book, We Are Soldiers Still. But I was surprised that no one had yet written a book about Moore himself. So at around the same time, I myself commissioned as an officer in the U.S. Army, and as a young lieutenant, decided that I was going to reach out to the retired general, see what I could do about writing his biography. And the result was Hal Moore, A Soldier Once and Always, which came out back in 2013. And as I was going over the manuscript and I was going through all the notes and all of the recorded interviews that we had, told myself, you know, I probably have enough here to do a follow-up book, one that really focuses on all of the principles of his leadership. Now, fast forward to 2016, and I'm speaking to Moore's family, and one of his elder sons, Steve, who is a retired lieutenant colonel, said, Mike, you know, it's interesting that you should talk about wanting to do a leadership book, because I was going through Dad's computer, and I found a 13,000-word outline of a book that he was already working on. So since Dad's pretty old at this point, he doesn't really use a computer anymore, how about I give you this outline and you can take it across the finish line for us? The result of that was Hal Moore on Leadership, and it has been an incredible pleasure to work on that book, and it has been well-received by all the readers out there who have read it.
Well, I sure can understand why. And now the flow and the thoughts make a great deal of sense. And you had not just the benefit of what he wrote, but But you had a chance to talk to his family and get their perspectives, too, because families often add a perspective that the person himself doesn't see.
Absolutely.
And thought I saw a lot of that kind of input, but it's sort of hard to tell. But I wanted to ask you. That's why I'm glad we're interviewing. I suspect particularly sons, but not just wife, sons, other people, get insights into the quality of the person and some of their characteristics and good and bad ones. So that's part of your book, isn't it?
Yes, indeed.
So subtitle of the book is Winning When Outgunned and Outmanned. And so not winning was never in Moore's thought process, was it? I mean, his leadership style and principles work in business and other environments, but he just didn't think about not winning. And that's an interesting phenomenon. Nobody wants to think about not winning, but all of us are confronted with reality. But I don't think, based on what I've read or what I've heard before reading your book, that that was anywhere in his personality. Am I reading something into this?
No. As a matter of fact, you're absolutely right. You know, one of the things that he said, and I remember he said this during one of our interviews, and I'll never forget it. He said, if for one instant you think that you're going to lose, then you've already lost. You know, positive self-talk and trying to suppress the cognitive dissonance will actually pay dividends for you in any field of endeavor. And in whatever you do, that perennial positive attitude is going to be a force multiplier.
Well, that certainly seems to be true in life. This is Colonel Danny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom, and we're discussing Hal Moore on leadership with his author, I guess co-author, Mike Guardia. Mike, I got to understand who he was. He sort of made his name while he was in Vietnam as a battalion commander of the 1st Battalion, 7th Cav. His understrength unit went into the Iadrang Valley in search for the North Vietnamese, and they found him. But before we get to that, he served and learned a lot during his time in Korea and in Vietnam prior to that. Talk a little bit about that experience, which sort of gave him the background to be the battalion commander he was.
Sure. Well, his first taste of combat was in the hilltop battles of North Korea. He actually joined the Army during World War II, but he was a West Point cadet throughout much of the war, and he graduated with the class of 1945, and he was actually en route to the Pacific when the Japanese surrendered. So for the next 5 years, he was keeping himself busy with the normal round of occupation duty in occupied Japan, and that helped him build a good foundation of what a tactical junior leader should be. Now, by the time he gets to Korea, it is 1952, and he is a young captain at this point. The major offenses in the war had ended, and the Korean War had pretty much devolved into a stalemate. You had a lot of these outpost battles. Both sides had dug themselves into trenches, pretty much World War I style. But in these meat grinder battles, for really is what the Korean War is known for. All of these hilltop meat grinder battles that he was in taught him the importance of keeping one's head clear and keeping one's head in the fight. He had soldiers on the left and right of him tragically killed in action. And the method of fighting that the North Koreans used were eerily similar to the fighting methods that he would see in North Vietnam. That being, you know, it was a war where the friendlies and the enemy soldiers were often mixed together and had a hard time telling where one force ended and another force began. And for him, the biggest takeaway of that was that you know, in any battle where you have such controlled chaos going on, the success is really handled at the small unit level. The success starts with making sure that your junior leaders have disciplined initiative and that you let them fight the fight the way that they're best equipped to.
That's a very good way to put it, because you can have five people who are very good leaders, but all of them have different techniques, respond to stress differently. All will get the job done, but you put them in a tin box and they've all got to do it the same way. You're going to decrease the effectiveness of some of them.
Right.
And he was, and was very well known for, you get the job done, and that doesn't mean unethically, but it does mean get the job done using whatever techniques, styles, leaders, weapons, tools you have available. And that's a sign of a good leader in or out of combat, isn't it?
Right. Sure is.
I know that I've been retired from the Army 34 years, and I've run a few businesses, and the smartest thing you can do is find somebody good, give them some guidelines, and turn them loose to do it, not micromanage. And I couldn't imagine Hal Moore being a micromanager.
Nope, not at all.
Okay.
In fact, one of his leadership principles was you push the power down.
Well, and the wisdom of that is incredible. He's just one of the most incredible guys ever, and he certainly was able to, in the book, and we'll talk about this in a bit, able to show how good leadership is good leadership, whether it's in combat, whether it's not in combat, whether it's in business, whether wherever it is. Good leadership is good leadership, and it's the responsibility of the leader to be a good leader. The ball stops with the leader. That's a safe summary, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Okay, well, there's more to discuss about General Moore and leadership, specifically the battle that made him the most famous, the battle in the Iodrang Valley in Vietnam, where as a battalion commander with less than half a battalion, he took on a huge number of enemy. And we're going to discuss that, and Mike is going to stay with us. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. Troops, it's push-ups time. I want you to do 103 push-ups. Hey, that's how many I do every day. Then take a break, but stay in the area. We'll be right back. Why would a U.S. soldier in combat be jailed for shooting the enemy? I mean, isn't that why we send our troops into combat? Yet a number of our troops are or have been in military prison for murder for killing our enemies. The problem is confusing rules of engagement and some of our leaders who lack the courage to stand up for their troops. United American Patriots stands up for these troops. Check UnitedPatriots.org. That's UnitedPatriots.org.
Exercise is hard. So is maintaining a healthy diet. Of course, neither is half as hard as dying. Type 2 diabetes, heart disease, and stroke kill nearly a million people a year. But most of these deaths are preventable with regular activity, a healthier diet, and not smoking. Talk to your doctor about your risk for type 2 diabetes and heart disease. You can stop it starting right now. Get moving. Visit checkupamerica.org or call 1-800-DIABETES. A message from the American Diabetes Association.
Good morning, Hunterdon. This is Big C coming to you from HunterdonChamberRadio.com at the studio offices of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce in Flemington, New Jersey. Good morning, Hunterdon kicks off your day by providing you with local news, traffic and weather, as well as light topics through Vitamin C, Wake Up Call, and Chamber Chat. I also have many guests focusing on Hunterdon County community, business, and education. Listen to me every weekday morning from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. on Good Morning Hunterdon, HunterdonChamberRadio.com.
I'm Andy Ross. I'm chairman of the Ambassadors Committee of the Chamber. As members of the Ambassadors Committee, we contact new and renewing members of the Chamber to get their feedback on their Chamber experience and make them feel more at home with the Chamber.
Hunterdon Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
This program is brought to you by Joe Peters at Coldwell Banker, certified USAA Real Estate Rewards Network agent. If you are a spouse or a USAA member, you can get a reward of between $350 and $6,000 when you buy or sell your next home. This also applies to children of current USAA members. Call Joe Peters at Coldwell Banker to learn more. He can be reached at 908-238-0118. That's 908-238-0118.
This is Colonel Denny Gillum. This is the final formation for this hour on Frontlines of Freedom. We're continuing our conversation with author Mike Guardia about the late General Hal Moore on leadership. Well, He made his reputation as a lieutenant colonel, as the battalion commander of the 1st Battalion, 7th Cav, in the Battle of the Idrang Valley. Talk to us about that battle, Mike.
Okay. Well, let's wind the clocks back to 1965. This was the outset of America's combat mission in Vietnam. And at this point in the war, it was still very young, and we were still trying to figure out exactly how the North Vietnamese fought as a unit and as an entire fighting force. To this point, we had only had a few touch-and-go engagements with the Viet Cong, but we hadn't had any sustained land combat with the People's Army of North Vietnam, and we still had a lot to learn about what their tactical dispositions were. There was only so much that we could learn from reading books about how they fought the French, but in the 11 or so years that had passed since the French were defeated at Dien Bien Phu, a lot had happened, and they had also gotten a lot closer to our adversaries, the Soviets, and this new People's Army of North Vietnam of the 1960s was going to be slightly different than the one that the French had fought. So what the Battle of Ai Trang did, in a sense, was create a measuring stick for both sides. This was the first engagement of the war where you had U.S. regulars fighting North Vietnamese regulars. And it not only showed us how the North Vietnamese fought, and we were surprised to learn that their tactics were very similar to the North Koreans that we had fought a decade earlier, but it also gave them a measuring stick for how they would fight against us. This was the first time the North Vietnamese had ever seen a helicopter, and they knew that this new concept of air mobile infantry was going to change the equation for them. After the Battle of Ai Trang, they took a look at the numbers, and they said, okay, well, we fought the Americans. We actually outnumbered them, but they still won. And one of the things that was the deciding factor in their favor was this thing called the helicopter. This isn't going to be an easy victory like we had against the French back in the 1950s. This helicopter changes the equation for us and for them because they can leap in and out of battle, and they are not restricted to the terrain in the same fashion that we are. So if we ever stand a chance of standing toe-to-toe against the Americans in protracted combat, we're going to have to sit down and do a lot of head work as to how we're going to mitigate the effectiveness of this thing called the helicopter, because they have it and we don't.
Well, yeah, and they sure did. Hal had an understrength battalion going in, and he only got about half of his understrength battalion in before the fighting started, right?
That is correct.
So he's probably outnumbered 6 or 8 to 1, and he should have been beaten, but he wasn't. From reading the book and from what I knew before that, it was not dumb luck. It was, they'll never pass up the role of luck. Sometimes where he put somebody was just the right thing at the right time, and who knows exactly what that was. But he maintained a cool head, and I can tell you from having been in combat, indeed in combat at that same time, when the leader's cool head, it's easy to continue doing your job. When the boss is looking frantic, it's tough to survive. That didn't happen in Ai Trang, did it?
Nope. He kept his cool all the while. And I think that was in many ways attributed to the power that he vested in his junior leaders. You know, he was by no means a micromanager, and he developed his company commanders and even developed platoon leaders to have that take charge attitude and to fight the fight the way they thought they could in order to win. His was much of a bottom-up style of leadership. And one of the critical factors, and I think what saved a lot of men's lives at the Battle of Ai Trang, was the fact that he stressed the importance of making sure that all of his junior leaders knew how to call in artillery. Because if I think back to a letter that he wrote home to Julie from the Korean War, he said that having a good knowledge of fire support very often separates the men from the boys.
Well, that's true. And I don't remember when I learned it, but if I had been in the 1st or 7th, I'd have been a brand new second lieutenant with him, and I would have been glad to have been taught that. And it did make a difference. Artillery was a huge equalizer, or more than equalizer, advantage that we had, that with air and helicopters. This is Colonel Denny Gilliam on Frontlines of Freedom. We're discussing the leadership of General Hal Moore with Mike Guardia. Mike, I really appreciated the book, and it's just full of bullet points, that's in my mind, of cool things that he said. If given a choice between taking over a good outfit and a bad outfit, choose the bad outfit every time because they'll have nowhere to go but up. The wisdom of that is very, very clear. It's full of juicy little points like that. The funniest one, which I thought, was when he took over a unit, If they had any trophies displayed, any of them that weren't first-place trophies would be thrown away. We don't display second-place trophies or participation trophies. The man just didn't know how not to be a leader, did he?
Absolutely.
And the other thing is his nonstop statement of a leader. I always got to be asked, what am I doing that I shouldn't be and what am I not doing that I should be? It's not just be in charge and stand around and watch things. He strikes me as a guy whose mind never shut down. I wondered how he slept.
Well, it is actually a segue into a very good story that I can tell you. This was a conversation that I had with Joe Galloway about a year and a half ago. And he was telling me that one of the things that Moore really wanted to do after he retired from the military was catch up on all of his sleep. So he retired from the military back in 1977, and around 1990 is when he and Joe Galloway started working together on the book that would become We Were Soldiers Once and Young. Now, that was a two-year process for them, almost, and it was fraught with a lot of research and a lot of late nights. And Moore purportedly told him, you know, Joe, I was catching up on all my sleep until we started this project. By the time we started this project, I had caught up on all the sleep that I lost from my time at West Point right up until the Korean War, and now you've disrupted all the catching up I have to do.
Boy, do I relate to that. Folks, this is we're going to give away a copy of the book, Hal Moore on Leadership, at the end of this show. Mike, I suspect that many listeners are going to want to buy a copy. I presume they can get them anywhere, Amazon, anywhere?
Absolutely. You can get them at Amazon. They are also available at Barnes & Noble. You can pick up a copy of Books A Million, and it is also available on Kindle.
So I truly, truly recommend this book to everyone. If leadership is all important to you, whether you're going to be a leader or look for a good one to follow, or both, this book has got more easy-to-read, easy-to-digest ideas than I've found in any book. And I think I said this already, but one of the techniques that I've always used to help subordinates become good is to find good ones, give them a mission, make sure they know what to do, and get out of their way. That was certainly one of his key leadership styles. It certainly is one that I don't know where I picked it up from, but it's certainly one that I've never seen it fail. Well, it can fail because not everybody's perfect, but nothing is perfect, and it works better than any other technique I've ever run into. Mike, thank you for taking time to join us today. Thank you for sharing the world about the late, great leadership style of General Hal Moore. Thank you for your service to our nation. I'm proud to call you a friend. Let's stay in touch.
Absolutely, Denny, and thank you so much for having me on your show. I can't tell you how much I appreciate it.
Now it's time for our Stand Tall Troop Report. This is when we find an outstanding performance of duty, and we're privileged to honor this fine troop. Well, Cardinal Timothy Dolan, the Archbishop of New York, joined the National Guard's top chaplain in Times Square to salute the Army's most famous chaplain, New York National Guard Lieutenant Colonel Francis Duffy. They were honoring Duffy on the anniversary of his death on 26 June 1932 by laying a wreath at the memorial to Father Duffy erected in Times Square in 1937. Quote, Father Duffy was one of those chaplains who allowed his ministry to follow the soldiers, Brandt said. In true chaplain's fashion, he cared about the person more than the ideology. Father Duffy served all regardless of religion, seeing each person as a child of God. Duffy first served as an Army chaplain for returning veterans of the Spanish-American War at Mattock Point, Long Island, in 1898. He went on to become a chaplain of the National Guard 69th Infantry Regiment in 1914 while serving as pastor of Our Savior Parish in the Bronx. Duffy accompanied the regiment to the Mexican border in 1916 when National Guard troops were mobilized to stop cross-border raids by Mexican revolutionary leader Pancho Villa. Returning in the spring of 1917, Duffy and the 69th mobilized for World War I and became the 165th Infantry Regiment, destined for service with the newly formed 42nd Rainbow Division. He is the most decorated chaplain in Army history, and Duffy's wartime service set the standard for military chaplains who would follow. In his memoir, Duffy wrote that he didn't care about the soldiers' place of birth or ethnic background, but liked to think they were all Irish by adoption, Irish by association, and Irish by conviction. He received the Distinguished Service Cross and the Distinguished Service Medal, along with the Legion of Honor and Croix de Guerre from the French military leaders. Quote, quote, he was a muddy boots chaplain, McKay said, whose fame was derived not from his rank or position, but from his willingness to endure the same risks as the soldiers. So stand tall in heaven, Father Francis Duffy. Frontlines of Freedom and all of our nation's patriots salute you. This concludes the first hour of the show. We'll start the second hour meeting a WASP. Jane Doyle was a female pilot for an Army during World War II, a Woman's Air Force Service pilot. Then we'll learn about the largest air show in the world, its Air Venture at Oshkosh, Wisconsin, this month. Of course, we'll conclude with our weekly mailbag, military history, and our Armed America Report. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. Troops at spring go out and run a couple of miles of wind sprints, then grab some protein and rehydrate with water. Finally, put a big smile on your proud-to-be-an-American face and send me your thoughts by email or on Facebook. Sergeant Dale Beatty was wounded by a roadside bomb.
Swift 1-2 is en route with urgent ASAC to Mercy. ETA approximately 35 minutes. How copy?
Now begins the most important journey of his life.
Roger, Swift 1-2.
From the battlefield to home. Home to some very good medicine. His family's love. They'll be staying together at one of the many Fisher houses to help Dale get better and return to his life. Fisher House Foundation provides comfortable housing and other services to the families of wounded warriors and veterans while they receive care at military and VA hospitals. Fisher House is among the highest rated charities, with 95% of donations going to help our military families in their time of greatest need. Remember those who serve and sacrifice. Consider a tax-deductible gift to Fisher House. Fisher House, because a family's love is good medicine. Go to fisherhouse.org for more information.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, 100inChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the 100in County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
The news is sponsored by the 100in Medical Center. 100in Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. 100in Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call 100in Medical Center's physician referral service at 1-800-511-4HMC or visit us on the web at www.100inhealthcare.org.
USA Radio News.
All the soccer players and coach that were trapped in a Thailand cave were rescued earlier today by Navy SEALs. Dr. Mark Siegel lays out some of the challenges ahead for the boys.
They're going to have flashbacks, my opinion. They're going to have derealization, periods of disorientation. All that can be treated with cognitive behavioral therapy and possibly medication, but therapy is key here, and the earlier the better.
The confirmation battle ahead for Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh is already beginning. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell took to the Senate floor earlier today.
A number of our Democratic colleagues could not even wait until the president's announcement last night before launching attacks on his nominee. This was, in some cases, quite literally a fill-in-the-blank opposition. They wrote statements of opposition only to fill in the name later. Sadly, this is not a new approach for the far-left special interest groups.
Kavanaugh is set to begin meeting with senators today. This is USA Radio News.
Ugh, you guys, I am so ready for the beach.
I'm not.
What? The trip is coming up soon.
Yeah, my beach body is nowhere close to where I want it to be.
Same here. I've got to lose some weight before we go.
Plus, I know you're going to want to post pictures from the trip all over Facebook.
Well, why don't you guys try Calitrin?
Calitrin? That sounds really familiar.
It's super easy to take, and it's even healthy for you. You just take it at bedtime, and it does all the work for you.
You're joking.
No, I'm not joking, and you're going to feel good taking it.
So I got the Calitrin, and I got into pants that I had not been into in a year and a half. It also took my hot flashes away.
Hey, this is Jack, and I've been using Calitrin. I used to go to the chiropractor at least once a week. The Calitrin has definitely helped me, and I definitely recommend it to anybody.
This is Lynn. I've been on Calitrin, and I love it, and I've lost 45 pounds.
So where can I get Calitrin?
You can go to their website at toploss.com, or you can call them at 833-TOP-LOSS.
Boston is thinking about letting people who aren't U.S. citizens vote in city elections. USA Radio Network's Chris Barnes has the details.
The Boston City Council holding a Tuesday hearing on whether to give the right to vote to non-citizens who are in the U.S. legally. People who would be eligible to vote would include legal permanent residents known as green card holders, DACA recipients, immigrants with temporary protected status, and those who have visas. The council president saying before the hearing began, there wasn't going to be a vote on an ordinance, but simply the start of a conversation. For USA Radio News,